Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Delighted to be back with you. Thank you very much to everybody up in North Dakota, where I was visiting for a few days with our friends at Real Presence Catholic Radio. And boy, do they do a fantastic job up there. And then it started to snow and I couldn't get home. So Chris covered for me. I think it was Chris covered. Was it Chris? Yeah, covered for me yesterday. Thank you to Edgar and Chris and David who covered while I was away. But very happy to be back, and especially happy because it's Thursday. It's open forum. Jimmy Akin's here. We're going to have some some groovy music at some point. And we've got some fine young people in the studio who are going to ask Jimmy some questions throughout the next couple hours. Jimmy Akin, of course, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and proprietor of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Hello, Jimmy Akin.
Howdy, Cy. How you doing?
Very well. Very happy to be out of airports and home.
Yeah. So glad you could join us on the show today. Do you do radio interviews very often?
Not too often, no.
When was the last one you did?
Earlier this week for Real Presence Radio.
Okay, so you do have some experience with radio then?
Yes. Why is that?
Good. I'm just messing with you.
Do you remember that we've done this together before? Or
is it so long? Oh, I remember that. I wanted to make sure you did.
Okay, yeah, I remember it. I do indeed remember it. Then there was something I was going to ask you, Jimmy, and now it went right out. Well, I'll ask you this while I think of the other thing I was going to ask you. Okay. What drops on Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow is our 300th episode, and at least in numbered terms. We've actually had more than 300 episodes because we do some bonus ones. But of the regular series of numbered episodes, tomorrow is number 300, which is a nice milestone. And so I decided to commemorate it by discussing mysterious experiences that the listeners of Mysterious World have sent in. We've got over 100,000 listeners an episode, and with that sizable an audience, a lot of the audience members have had strange, unusual experiences happen in their life. And so a while back, I invited them to send in mysterious experiences they'd had. And when I collected them all up, now some of them sent in recordings or even video, but when I took just the written ones and put them in a single Word document, it was like 80 pages long.
Holy smokes.
Single spaced.
Wow.
And so what we're going to be doing tomorrow is taking a selection of those experiences, and we'll read them so the audience will get a sense of, you know, what happened and what the person perceived. And then I'll offer a few thoughts on possible explanations for it. I'm not on the scene at the time the event occurred, so I can't do a personal field investigation. But I can, you know, say, okay, so this is the category that the reported experience would go in, you know, because there are different types of experiences people have. And so I can give a name to them usually and say, this is the kind of experience, and other people have reported similar things. And here are some possible explanations. Some of them will be natural explanations. Some of them will be paranormal explanations, but it'll provide a little food for thought.
Oh, that's fun. That is great.
Yeah.
That's cool. So 300th episode, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, with every episode, you get closer to Gunsmoke, right? I don't know how many.
Indeed.
I don't know how many Gunsmoke get. Look at
not
up,
as many as
Jack.
The Simpsons.
Oh, the Simpsons, do they have more episodes than any other television program?
Well, they have more than Gunsmoke.
Oh, yeah.
At least if you're talking about TV episodes. If you're talking about the radio. Gunsmoke,
yeah.
Then that could change.
Yeah, the Simpsons radio show was terrible. I'm only
kidding. Have you ever heard the Gunsmoke radio show?
I have. I've heard, on like classic radio programs on YouTube. I listen to every now and then. Yeah.
And it was very interesting. It was a little different than the TV version. Now I'm blanking on his name, but the actor who played the marshal in the radio version.
Come on.
He's got a great voice, but he was also the guy from Jake and the Fat Man. And he played the fat man. And so when they went to television, he didn't really look the part. He had a great voice for the part, but he didn't look the part. And so they cast, I want to say Matt Dillon.
Is it Matt Dillon?
I'm thinking that's the character's name.
Yeah,
that's the character. They cast a different guy.
Right. That was when everything was for a while there in American media, everything was a cowboy show or was an old Western show.
Certainly very popular. And then outer space happened, and we learned all about that in Toy Story 1 with Buzz and Woody.
James Arness.
James Arness, that's right. Yeah,
played Marshal Matt Dillon. Yeah, and now there's an actor, Matt Dillon. 888-318-7884 is the number. This is what I wanted to ask you, because I had an experience with Tim Staples today, and I wanted to see if you were in the same club as us. Jordan, who works in the development department here, is about to turn 30. And she told us that a man about our age at church, there was context for this, but I won't give it, asked if she was 18 yet. And she said, how could he think that I'm, and Tim and I both had the reaction of, at a certain point, we as men lost the ability to judge how old anybody is. At some point between 50 and 60, do you have that experience? Is it hard for you to tell how old people are, or can you do it?
I'm pretty sure I could tell the difference between an 18-year-old and a 30-year-old.
Well, Jordan is young, but she doesn't look 18. That's true.
Yeah, but in general, I'm not very good, and never have been very good at telling people's ages.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Tim and I both, we kind of leapt to this guy's defense, like, Jordan, you don't get it. At a certain point, it's hard to tell. Is this person in high school, or is this person the doctor here? You know, you can't tell.
Also, the only constant frame of reference I have is myself, and even though I am challenged in the hair follicle category on the top of my head, I know I don't look as old as I actually am. People are stunned when I tell them I'm 58 years old.
Yeah. I wish that was the case with me a little bit. Tim and I'm the oldest of the three of us. I'm 2 weeks older than Tim.
Okay.
And so 2 weeks out of every year, I'm much wiser and more seasoned than he is. And then he catches up with me on July 11th each year.
I see.
888-318-7884 is the number. Let's start with Abraham in Atlanta, Georgia, watching on YouTube. Abraham, somebody hit line one for me, will you? Abraham, thank you very much for the call. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hello. Hey, yeah, my question was on annulments and if they're valid, because I talked to two priests, and they told me that even if I get my annulment approved, that it would still be a sin because I would still be married in God's eyes. So I'm just conflicted about if I should even apply for one.
Well, okay, so were these Catholic priests that you talked to?
Yes. Yeah, they were Catholic priests.
And were they members of any particular group of Catholics?
No, I didn't ask them.
Okay. Well, I'm astonished that that a Catholic priest would tell you that, because annulments are very well grounded, and the principles that annulments are based on go all the way back to the Bible. There were certain classes of unions in the Bible that where you couldn't marry somebody, such as, for example, if you're too closely related to them by blood, you weren't allowed to marry them. And there were other impediments that would stop a marriage from coming into existence. And so it's pretty clear that the Bible recognizes not all attempts at marriage are valid ones. And so if you can establish that something was wrong with a marriage from the beginning, that prevented it from coming into existence, well, then obviously that person is not bound to their first attempted spouse, and they're free to marry somebody else. And that's all an annulment is. It's a finding that the original marriage was not binding, and therefore you're not bound to that person, and you can marry someone else. I wonder what, you know, if there could have been a miscommunication. I mean, one of them might have misspoken, or they might have not explained it clearly. But the legitimacy of annulments has been recognized all the way down through church history. Maybe they were talking about something else. Maybe they were saying you need an annulment in order to be able to remarry. Or maybe they were confusing an annulment with a divorce, because a divorce is not the same thing as an annulment. Maybe they misspoke and they referred to a divorce as an annulment. I'm not really sure what would be going on here, but Catholics have recognized that not all marriages are valid all the way down through history. And so if you can show that a marriage was not valid at the time it was contracted, then you're just not bound to that person and you're free to marry someone else. So if you're if you have a prior marriage and you are interested in marrying someone else in the future, then yeah, by all means, apply for an annulment.
Yeah, I was just conflicted because I know like the church does teach about annulments and
yeah.
Because one thing is that I do get an annulment and they don't approve it, then I'll be fine with that, you know? Like, if I can't get married again, I can't get married again. But if they just pretty much just told me, even if I do get it approved, that it would still be a sin. So that's where I was.
If that's what they said, whether they meant to say that or not, if that's what they said, they were mistaken. Just flat out mistaken.
Abraham, if you hang on the line, I'd like to send you a little book we have called 20 Answers, Divorce and Remarriage. It might be helpful to you. You're always welcome to call here. Thank you for the call. We got to go to a break now. It's open forum. Jimmy Akin is our guest. Right back with more questions after this on Catholic Answers Live.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Discover the beauty, truth, and goodness of the Church. With the EWTN online learning series, you can delve into the riches of the faith and grow closer to the Lord with free videos and study guides. Enroll in the EWTN online learning series free courses today at learningseries.ewtn.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's open forum. Jimmy Akin is our guest. You are welcome to call 888-318-7884. But if you really want to get your question answered, one way to do it is just come here into the studio. And we have a very fine delegation of seniors from St. Joseph Academy, which is a Catholic school up the road from us, a piece here in Southern California. And we're delighted to have them here with us. And Jacinta is here to ask a question. Did I get that all right? All seniors from St. Joseph's Academy? And St. Joseph's Academy goes, like, it's all the way through, right? Kindergarten to seniors in high school?
TK through 12.
TK through 12. Did you do that?
I didn't. I came in sixth grade.
Oh, all right. And here you are, senior, ready to ask Jimmy a question.
Yes. So I was wondering if you know of any saints who teach that prayer and sacraments are the only treatment for depression.
No, I'm not. Now, I have to confess that you're asking about one of the areas that I'm not super well versed in, because there are several thousand saints and I haven't had time to study all of their opinions on everything. So, you know, there might be some saint that had opinions like that, but it would have been a saint a long, long time ago, before the invention of modern means of treating depression. And I would be astonished if any saints in recent times, and by recent times I mean the last 1,000 years, taught something like that, because there have been recognitions of ways besides prayer and the sacraments of treating depression that have been authorized by Catholic saints for 1,000 years and more. For example, in the Middle Ages, one of the saints, a doctor of the church named Hildegard of Bingen, wrote a whole book called Physica about medicine and how various substances, you know, can treat, or at least in her time were believed to treat various conditions, including those of a neurological nature or a psychological nature. Not all of her recommended treatments are endorsed by modern medicine, because we've learned a lot about medicine in the last 1,000 years, but she would prescribe things for depression, including, they didn't use that word, depression is a more modern term, but they would refer to depression and depression related conditions as things like melancholy. So if someone was said to be melancholic, it would mean they had a depressed personality, a depressed emotional expression. And there were various treatments. Some of them were herbs. Some of them were based on animal products. Some of them were based on mineral products. I don't recall what Hildegard of Bingen prescribed for depression or melancholy, but I do know she prescribed for other conditions of a neurological nature. Like, for example, one of the things she believed was that emeralds, the gem, have the ability to help with certain medical conditions, including epilepsy, which is a neurological condition. And so she thought you could use emeralds to treat epilepsy. Now, modern medical science doesn't endorse that view, but what you can see from this is how even saints living hundreds and hundreds of years ago were open to treatments for depression besides just prayer and the sacraments. They thought there were other things that could help.
Does that help you, Jacinta? That
yes,
gets what you wanted?
That does help. Thank you so much.
Very good, Al. Nice job starting it off for your classmates. You set a high standard, so we'll see how they do. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll go back to the phones, and then we'll let some more of these students come in and ask questions. It's open forum. Jimmy Akin is our guest. We're going to New York now. Kevin's in New York listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Welcome, Kevin. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Thank you. My question is about Matthew 26 and verse 64. Jesus compares himself to the Son of Man, which is the Daniel prophecy. But I've often heard that Caiaphas and most of the priests were Sadducees, which means they didn't accept anything past the Pentateuch. I'm not exactly sure where Caiaphas is like told to be a Sadducee himself. But my real question is, why would Caiaphas be offended by that prophecy? He wouldn't even believe it's true, right, from the Book of Daniel.
Well, it's not so much that it's from the Book of Daniel; it's what Jesus is claiming about himself. Verse 63, so this is Matthew 26:63. Jesus has not been responding to the charges that are being made against him. And the high priest says to him, I put you under oath by the living God that you testify if you are the Christ, the Son of God. So that's the charge he's put to him. He's commanding him to answer that charge. And Jesus replies by saying, you have said it. But I tell you, from now on, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming on the clouds of heaven. So that's a reference to the Book of Daniel. And if Caiaphas was a Sadducee, then presumably he would not have recognized Daniel as canonical. But it's not that Jesus would be claiming to fulfill that prophecy. It would be the implications about what Jesus is claiming about himself. Because in this period in Judaism, there was a doctrine that today is referred to as the two powers in heaven doctrine. And the basic idea was that in addition to Yahweh, God, there was also another divine figure in heaven, a second power in heaven, who was sometimes referred to as the little Yahweh or the second Yahweh. And this was a doctrine that was around in Judaism, and it's based on a variety of texts, this prophecy from Daniel being one of them, because in this prophecy, the Son of Man is brought before the Ancient of Days. The Ancient of Days is clearly Yahweh. And the Son of Man is brought before him on a cloud, indicating he's also a divine heavenly figure. And so the Son of Man was understood in some Jewish circles to be this second Yahweh or the little Yahweh, and thus as a divine figure in himself. But not all Jews accepted this. Other Jews rejected the two powers in heaven doctrine and considered it heretical. And so that's why Caiaphas reacts the way he does. He tears his clothes and says he has blasphemed. And the reason he does that is because he, even though he may not regard Daniel as a legitimate book, Jesus has just claimed to be the second Yahweh right in front of him. Jesus is saying, I'm that guy. I'm the second Yahweh. And since Caiaphas appeared to reject the two powers in heaven doctrine, he would regard anybody claiming to be divine as a blasphemy that takes away from the true God if you're also claiming to be God. And so that's the reason that Caiaphas gets offended here. It's because he perceives Jesus as blaspheming by claiming to be a divine being.
Kevin, thank you. Fascinating question. I appreciate it. As I said, we've got some young folks in the studio with us from St. Joseph.
Are you going to say that before every young folk you bring into the studio?
I might. I don't know.
You think you don't need to. You can just say, and here's another one of our seniors.
All right, let me give it a try. Let's see.
Okay.
Here's another one of our seniors. Silas, do I have the right name? Silas, welcome. Go ahead, right on the microphone. You came with a question for Jim. Well, first of all, let me ask you this. How long have you been at St. Joseph's Academy?
I'm one of the 13 years.
Oh, you did the whole 13 years?
I've done the whole 13 years.
Well, it seems to have worked. It seemed to have been effective raising you up into a fine person. So that's a good advertisement.
Yeah, it's a great school.
Oh, very good. All right, go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
How can we present the gospel in a compelling way, especially to young men who increasingly lack direction and meaning in the world today?
Well, so it's going to depend on the context, because what we need to do is adjust how we present the gospel to the audience we're talking to. And there can be a lot of different circumstances. Like, for example, if someone's giving a talk to a group of young men, and they've come here specifically to hear about the gospel, well, then you can get up and you can deliver an exciting talk and talk about the greatness of the gospel, how we can be saved and we can be rescued from the sinfulness that we all are aware of, whether we want to admit it publicly or not. We all know we're not perfect, and that means that we need forgiveness, we need redemption, and all of those things are possible in Jesus Christ. And so we can make a big emotional talk that's very compelling and give it to this group of young men who have all come knowing that that's why they're here. They're here to listen to such a talk. But if we're in a different situation, let's say you're just hanging out talking with friends, well, they're here to talk to you. They're not here to listen to a talk. And they're not here to, you know, when people give talks, they tend to be, now not necessarily, I'm not necessarily this way, but a lot of people are very theatrical when they give talks. And it would seem weird if they're just here to hang out and maybe eat pizza or something, and you start giving them a big theatrical production about the greatness of the gospel, you know, it wouldn't be appropriate to the social setting. And so you would want to find a lower key way to begin a discussion of this. Exactly how you get it on the table is going to depend on the individuals you're talking to. A great way to begin is by asking people questions and asking questions that you can then relate to the subject of the gospel in one way or another. You might, for example, if you're talking about social issues, you know, that involve moral questions. Well, I'm pretty sure unless you're talking to a sociopath who's not very good at hiding their sociopathy, then they're going to have some moral views. And you can use those moral views to build a foundation to talk about the gospel, about how, yeah, even though people who do X, whether it's abortion or racism or whatever it may be, that's bad. That's morally bad. But, you know, it's not just the people who are overt racists or who commit abortion, who are in need of forgiveness. That's really all of us, because, again, unless you're a sociopath, you got an awareness of your own sinfulness. And that can lead into a discussion of, well, so how do we fix that? How do we find redemption? How do we find meaning in life? And in fact, you mentioned in part of your question, you know, young men lacking direction and meaning. You know, well, it's true. A lot of people in our culture, they just kind of live day to day and they kind of live for pleasure. And ultimately, that's kind of meaningless and depressing. So how can we find meaning? You know, if one of your friends, let's say, is talking about how they feel depressed, you know, they don't have meaning in their life. Well, you can say, well, here's how we can find it. You know, God loves us all as individuals, and he has a purpose for us in life. And by responding to his love and his grace, we can find fulfillment and meaning that go beyond just the latest video game or hooking up with your girlfriend or taking drugs or whatever it may be. And so, so I would, if I'm talking to individuals in a personal setting, you know, finding out what their needs are, their interests are, and then using that by asking questions, and then using that as a kind of segue into talking about the gospel, I think would be a more successful approach than, you know, delivering them just a canned speech.
What do you think? Make sense to you?
Yes, it does.
Thank you very much for coming in and asking the question. Thanks for visiting us today. The number is 888-318-7884. You are welcome to call and get your question in. The lines are a bit busy, but they open up here and there, and we'd welcome your call. It's open forum. Jimmy Akin is our guest, and we will take a very quick break and be right back with more questions after this on Catholic Answers Live. Why We're Catholic is the one book you can hand to anyone to invite them into or back to the Catholic faith. With more than 400,000 copies sold, Trent Horn's book has had a number one ranking on Amazon.com for 5 years running. Now available in softcover, bulk cases, ebook, and on Audible. Find out what the excitement is all about. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic at shop.catholic.com or at a good Catholic bookstore. Visit whyweirecatholic.com.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Is Orthodoxy an alternative to the Catholic Church? In a time of uncertainty for many Catholics, Orthodoxy can look like greener pastures. Answering Orthodoxy, the new book from Catholic Answers Press, explains why Catholics who are thinking of leaving need to think twice. There are important reasons to remain in the Catholic Church and convincing answers to Orthodox claims. Order your copy of Answering Orthodoxy today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Matt Swaim here. Tomorrow on the Sunrise Morning Show, we'll preview the Sunday Mass readings with Father Hezekias Carnazzo and Father Jonathan Duncan, plus news, weather, sports, and more. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. A little bit of groovy music there for you. It's Thursday. Jimmy Akin is here. It's also open forum. And you know I like all those things, and I'm glad you're here. I hope you like all those things, too. Here's a little ad from Carrie. Let's see how I do reading it. Do you love learning about your faith? Do you love sharing the truth of Catholicism with others? Then you're going to love what we've got going on at shop.catholic.com through midnight tonight. It's a deal that comes along once every 4 years. It's our Leap Day sale. Come on by and jump into our Leap Day sale where promo code LEAP, L-E-A-P, saves you 29% store-wide. Get it? 29%. Books by all of our favorite Catholic all of your favorite Catholic apologists and authors, 29% off when you use the promo code LEAP, including Jimmy Akin's books. That's LEAP at shop.catholic.com. Back to the phone.
Have you ever seen The Pirates of Penzance?
I think I have, Jimmy. It's not ringing a bell right now, though. What?
It's an operetta by Gilbert and Sullivan. It's one of their most popular ones, together with the Mikado and the HMS Pinafore. It's the one that the Modern Major General song comes from.
Oh, I am the very model of a modern major. Yeah, I can't do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. But the plot is driven by the fact that our protagonist, a young gentleman named Frederick, who has just reached the age of 21, has been indentured to pirates. And there was a confusion. He was supposed to be indentured to a ship's pilot, but instead he accidentally got indentured to pirates of pilots. And so now that he's reached 21, he thinks, yay, I'm free. I don't have to fulfill duty anymore and be a pirate. I can turn my back on this horrible profession. I can even kill my former colleagues in the name of justice. And then two of his colleagues show up and they explain to him that although some person in authority, I don't know who, very likely the Astronomer Royal, although it's actually the Pope, has determined that as a rule, for February, 28 days are plenty. 1 year in every four, his days shall be reckoned as 9 and 20. And you, I don't know why, perhaps through the agency of an ill-natured fairy, are the victim of this clumsy arrangement, having been born in leap year on the 29th of February. And so, although in counting in the usual way, years 21, you've been alive. If we go by birthdays, you are only 5 and a little bit over. And his contract said he's indentured to them until his 21st birthday.
And oh, so, man.
And he's like, you're not going to hold me to that, are you? And they say, no. We wouldn't hold you to it at all. We merely point it out and leave the rest to your sense of duty.
Foiled by leap year.
Yeah. And I happen to have a brother who's born on leap year. His birthday is today.
And how old is he?
By birthdays, he's just had his 14th birthday.
Oh, well, congratulations. He can drive soon. That's
well, good. He'll be able to get a learner's permit by that reckoning. And in another 28 years, he'll be old enough to drink.
Oh, God. Ah, poor. Well, that's good. He'll drive a long time before he takes up the drinking.
But it is a most ingenious paradox.
Yeah. Rebecca's in Kansas watching on YouTube. Rebecca, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Yes. First, I want to say I really appreciate you, Si, saying that there's young people in the studio, because I'm 72, and when I heard there was a group of seniors in the studio, I took on a whole nother meaning.
Yeah, senior means something different for you, huh?
Yeah. I'm like, what kind of group of seniors? Okay. My question is about the rosary, and I want to know, is there any teachings in the church to guide you about how many intentions you can attach to one rosary?
3.5. You can make up to 3 attentions and half of another intention, but beyond that, it invalidates all of them.
I think it used to be 3, but they've moved it up to 3.5.
I'm joking with
you.
Right?
Yes.
I'm joking with you, Rebecca. Yeah.
From a parapsychology point of view, I thought it was maybe as many as you can hold in your head.
No, and in fact, you don't have to hold them all in your head. There's no limit to the number of requests you can make from God, and you don't even have to be thinking about them all at once. You can have what's called a virtual intention. So, like, if someone asked you to pray for them, let's say a little girl asked you to pray that she gets a new kitten, and then when it comes time to pray, you don't remember all the requests that people have asked you, but you intended to pray for her. And if you remembered, you would want to pray for that. And so you can just say, God, please help all the people who've asked me to pray for them. And that can be any number of people. And in the same way, it doesn't have to be different numbers of people. It can be all the things you meant to pray for, even if you don't remember them all right now. Or you can, if you remember a bunch of them, let's say you remember 50, you can rattle off 50. The only real guidance here is that the purpose of prayer is to help us, not to help God. And because he already knows, Jesus pointed this out, he already knows what we need before we even ask. So the purpose of prayer is not to give God information about what we need, or the Virgin Mary, you know, through the Virgin Mary to let God know what we need. God already knows all that. The purpose of prayer is to help us grow in love, both love of God and love of fellow Christians, including fellow Christians here on earth who we pray for, and fellow Christians in heaven who we ask to pray for us. So the purpose of it is love, and if the intentions are such that it's interfering with that, like let's say you feel like, oh, I've got to rattle off these 50 intentions. Well, that could make you resentful, and that could retard your growth in love. It could restrict it. And so that's the only real limit here, is it interfering with the purpose of the prayer to keep going on? And so there is a kind of practical limit. You know, some people might be able to say 5 intentions consciously before it becomes counterproductive. A few people might be able to say 500 before it becomes counterproductive. But probably somewhere in that range, there is a point where it's better to just say, and for everyone else that needs prayer, or everyone else that I wanted to pray for, or whatever, please help them too. And so there's no hard and fast number. It's just as many as you want. You don't even got to remember them all at the moment. And
well, we got a little tiny little freeze up, Rebecca, with Jimmy. But that all makes sense to you, Rebecca?
Yes, that's very comforting. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. As a matter of fact, we have a little booklet. It's called 20 Answers to the Rosary. Tom Nash wrote it. And if you'd like it, I'd be happy to send it to you. Edgar will get on the line in a second and take the information. If you'd like us to send you a copy of 20 Answers to the Rosary, we would be happy to send it. Up next in studio is Jacob. Are you a citizen, Jacob?
Yes, I am a citizen.
And you're a senior?
Yes.
And so you're a senior citizen?
That is correct.
Okay, very good. I'll tell you what we have to do. We got to take a quick break. So can you, I know I've made you wait a long time already, but do you mind hanging out in the studio a quick second?
It's fine.
All right, we'll do our break, and we will come right back with more Open Forum with Jimmy Akin and our in-studio guest, senior citizen Jacob, right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, this is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Keep your dial tuned to Catholic Answers Live.
In Morse code, the sequence SOS is a distress call. It's been said that it stands for Save Our Souls. Well, right now our world is in big trouble, and we're putting out an SOS call for help. Will you answer that call? St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, has hundreds of teams who share the good news with souls who don't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to get involved.
The most original Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
On Mother Angelica Answering the Call, Father Joseph and Doug Keck mine decades of phone calls answered by Mother Angelica. Mother dishes out teaching, advice, laughter, and plenty of prayers as she takes calls from her family.
Mother Angelica Answering the Call, Sunday afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And I'll tell you what, I just want to say this real quick because it's the last day of February, and I realize that our $150 off your cruise ticket ends today, so I should probably mention it again. If you go to CatholicAnswersCruise.com, if you want to cruise with us June 29th through July 6th, starting in Montreal, going through Quebec and Nova Scotia and ending up in Boston, Massachusetts. Check it all out at CatholicAnswersCruise.com. And if you want, if you sign up today when the promotion ends, just use the promo code BP150 and you will get $150 off whatever ticket you buy. BP150 at CatholicAnswersCruise.com. Jacob is in the studio. He is a senior at St. Joseph Academy. We have visitors from St. Joseph Academy today. Go ahead, Jacob, with your question for Jimmy.
So I was just wondering what you think the most important part of education and schooling for a Catholic is, and how that would take place.
Wow.
The most important part of schooling, meaning the topic that's being taught, or what exactly?
What I specifically had in mind was the stage of schooling.
Stage?
Okay.
So like elementary, middle school, high school, college.
Oh.
I know it goes by other names in other countries.
Yeah, okay. So I have to say I am not a child psychology or education expert, so I'm not really super qualified to have an opinion here. So take the opinion I'll express for what it's worth. Going back to the time of Aristotle, there was the idea that early childhood development, particularly before 7 years old, was crucial. Aristotle reportedly said, show me a child, or give me a child until he's seven and I'll show you the man, meaning that he could so educate a child in that first 7 years of development that he would be effectively mature by the end of it, or at least substantially mature. And a variation on that has been attributed to Saint Ignatius of Loyola as well. And certainly there are developmental markers that occur in the first 7 years of life that are very important. You know, for example, if a child is not socialized in the first 7 years of life, they won't learn how to talk. There are, for example, children who have been either living in the wild, or in the famous wild children, although a lot of those cases are really doubtful, or who have been isolated as due to abuse, and prevented from talking with each other during those first 7 years, and they have a really hard time, if it's even possible, for them to learn language later on. In some cases, there have been children who never learned language because they weren't exposed to it early enough. So there are certain developmental markers that are very important in very early life. But the situations that those apply to are somewhat rare. Most children don't have a problem getting through those first 7 years. And so I don't think we should overstress the importance of that phase of life. That's most of that phase occurs before primary education even begins. You know, you may have nursery school and kindergarten and first grade in that time, but it is the crucial learning doesn't really tend to happen there beyond certain fundamentals like language and maybe how to start learning to read and write. When we get later on, also another reason I wouldn't overstress those first years is because childhood amnesia starts to set in between ages 5 and 8. And that's the reason we don't remember what happened to us when we were 2 years old, because we forget all that. Our brain has this explosive growth of neurons in the first few years, and then it starts pruning them back and only keeping the things we need. And since we don't really need to remember what happened to us when we were a baby, we lose that information. And so we have this pre-programmed childhood amnesia stage to clean out all the stuff that we no longer need to set the ground for future intellectual development. When it comes to the period then between early childhood, so say age 7 and puberty, there is continued growth, but I think that that probably the stage within puberty, so say from age 13 to age 20, is a crucial one, because there are a lot of changes that happen during puberty in preparing one to be an adult. And I would say there's added importance to the education one receives in that period, but it's not all I would be concerned about, because once we get out of puberty into early adulthood, so like say college age, there's actually another spurt of brain growth and development that occurs that doesn't really finish until about age 25. And that gives you what you really need to function as an adult. And also, when you're in that early adulthood stage, whether you're going to a university or a technical school or what have you, that's when you're learning the skills that will really be important for you to use as an adult. Also, another factor is there tends to be, even though there are some bumps along the road that people encounter, there tends to be an ultimate assertion of the person's fundamental character. For example, as expressed in their genes. Even though kids may take a bunch of different paths, they tend to end up in a similar place to other people in their family based on their genetic component, and it just takes a while for those genes to assert themselves. So I don't think we want to overemphasize the value of education. But if I had to pick a single time period in life where education, in particular Catholic education, is particularly important, I would say probably during puberty and during young adulthood. Those two are particularly important periods. But really, what children need in terms of their Catholic education, their religious education, they need to see their parents living as Catholics. And they need to see their parents being loving, and they need to see their Catholics taking religion seriously. One thing that studies have shown is people whose parents are not loving or whose parents didn't really practice the faith in a serious way don't tend to end up staying with their faith as well as people who did have parents who were loving and took their religion seriously. And if you see that all the way through consistently, you have a much better chance of ending up as a well-rounded adult Catholic.
All right, Jacob.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank
you. You guys are deep thinkers over there at St. Joseph's Academy. Appreciate it. Let me go to the phones. Who's up next? Greg is in Chicago, Illinois. Greg, thank you for the call. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hi, guys. How are you today?
Very well. Thank you.
First, I just wanted to say that while I'm sure there are a lot of people becoming effective apologists without owning Jimmy's book, A Daily Defense, I think they're making it harder on themselves than they need to.
Well said, Greg. Well said.
Thank you.
So, well, thank you. My question comes from a conversation with a Catholic who says that they're personally against abortion, but thinks mm-hmm. there can be difficult situations where the decision to abort should be between a woman and her doctor. So my specific questions are with respect to something the church teaches infallibly, what is our obligation to accept or to believe privately and to proclaim to others?
If something has been infallibly taught by the church, then it is guaranteed to be true, and therefore we are required to believe it privately. There is not to be any disagreement with something that's infallible, because the Holy Spirit guarantees that it's true, and that applies to the immorality of direct abortion. This is confirmed, for example, by John Paul II in his encyclical Evangelium Vitae, or the Gospel of Life. So this is an infallible teaching. You cannot ever commit direct abortion. Now, there are certain things that can be done in extreme circumstances that are not direct abortion, but that would result in the death of the unborn child. Those are tragic situations, but they're not directly killing the child. These would be things, for example, like where a woman has a cancerous uterus and the uterus has to be removed because otherwise both the mother and the child are going to die. Well, removing a cancerous uterus is not the same thing as directly killing the child. So this is not direct abortion. For things that are infallible, you got to agree with them, and that's not just publicly, you got to agree privately too. In terms of what one's public expression is on those matters, well, you can't disagree with them, and if called upon to do so, one needs to acknowledge, direct abortion is always wrong. This is an infallible teaching, and as a Catholic, I support it. You may not be called upon in all situations to do that, But what we want to do in the public sphere is influence both public opinion and public policy in the direction of the truth. And since we know infallible teachings are true, that means we want to direct public opinion and public policy in the direction of agreeing with and supporting these teachings. So we want to encourage others, to the extent that it's practical, to recognize the wrongness of abortion, as an example. And we want to have public policy, including laws, configured to the extent possible, and politics is said to be the art of the possible. We want them, to the extent possible, to be configured to protect the life of the unborn child from direct abortion. So the idea that I can just privately disagree or privately agree with an infallible teaching like the one on abortion and that has no public consequences, that would be mistaken. But from what you reported, this woman said she thought there are certain circumstances where the decision should be left to the woman and her doctor. Well, not if it's direct abortion, but if it's an indirect situation where, let's say, a woman has a cancerous uterus and a judgment needs to be made about, well, how bad is this cancer? How aggressive is it? How is it progressing? Are there any safer alternatives that could preserve both the life of the mother and the child? There are judgment calls to be made in those situations. But what we should do is try to influence public opinion and policy towards a recognition of the truth. Direct abortion is always wrong, but we can't simply abdicate that responsibility and say it shouldn't be applied in the public arena, because we need to protect innocent kids. You can't say, oh, you know, I'm personally opposed to killing children, but I think there are certain circumstances where we ought to allow people to kill their children directly. You know, that makes no sense morally. And so those are some things that I would, in a nice way, present for the consideration of a person who is taking that opinion. You know, would you do this in some other situation? Would you do it if it wasn't children? Would it be family members? You know, should you be able to, in some circumstances, just decide it's best to kill, you know, your adult son or your adult daughter or your spouse or your brother or your sister? Should we leave those decisions to individuals to decide? Or should we have laws that protect people from being deliberately killed?
Greg, I'm going to leave it there because I have another person in studio here to ask a question, a senior at St. Joseph Academy. Miriam, welcome.
Hi.
Thank you for coming. You got a question for Jimmy Aiken?
Yes, I was just wondering, how do you reason with people who say that receiving daily communion is a bad thing?
Who are you encountering that says this?
I'm not really encountering it. I was just curious.
Okay. Well, so I would need to, in order to give a concrete answer, I'd need to know why the person was saying it was bad. So my first line of attack, so to speak, my first procedure would be to ask questions and say, well, why do you think that? However, in general, I would say, well, daily communion is a good thing because communion, you know, it's Jesus himself, and it's a privileged form of an encounter with Jesus. And he willed that we do this. He instituted the sacrament so that we would be able to encounter him in this intimate, miraculous way. So we know he wants us to do it. And he didn't say only do it once a year or only do it every week. So if it helps you grow closer to him, then in principle, it's a good thing. Now, some people it might not be for them to receive daily. You know, they might have a condition like obsessive compulsive disorder, which could make it hard for them to receive every day. So I wouldn't say it's for everybody, but in principle, encountering Jesus is a good thing. And the more you can do it, you know, without causing a problem, the better.
All right, Miriam, that makes sense to you? Thank you. Thank you very much for coming in. Well, we've got more of the folks visiting us that will join us next hour, but we've got lots of folks also on the line. If you'd like to call and ask Jimmy your question, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Tomorrow, a new episode of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World drops, and it's special because it's number 300. And will you just review again what you're going to do for that episode, Jimmy?
Yeah, we're going to be talking about mysterious experiences that have been had by our listeners. They sent in a whole bunch of really interesting situations they found themselves in. Some of them sound like they could involve ghosts. Some of them sound like they could involve premonitions. Some of them sound like they could involve demons. And so we're going to be reading their accounts of what's happened to them and talking about possible explanations for them.
Check it out. You can always check out Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. You can get all the past episodes and the new weekly episode each Friday morning at mysterious.fm, or just search Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Or maybe if you've got a question for Jimmy Akin, you might just call in the next hour. The lines will remain open. You are welcome to call 888-318-7884. It's open forum, and there's a lot more of that to come right after this on Catholic Answers Live.